Okay, welcome back, class. We are going to go ahead and continue reading Shiloh by Phyllis Reynolds Naylor. We are reading this with permission from Antietam Books for Young Readers. So, we've been learning that good readers stop to learn more about the topic when it's important to the text. That's why we read that outside text. And it's kind of interesting, you know. And based on what we learned there, do you think Marty is going to go ahead and turn Judd in to the authorities for mistreating his animals? I don't know. We'll find out, though. All right, so today I'm going to go ahead and teach you that good readers continue to think about what events are important as they read. They also look at the problems in the story and consider how the characters plan to solve these problems. You know, and that's one of the things that this type of genre, realistic fiction, speaks to. You know, you have a character that changes over time. Well, often it is some type of obstacle or problem that this character has to face that causes this change or this transformation of them. And again, that's one of the main things that we pay attention to in realistic fiction. So I want you to go ahead and listen as I model how I look for these big events and think about how these events are important. So when I'm going ahead, when I go ahead and try to verbalize my thinking, you know, the stem that I'm going to be using will be, you know, when the book said I was thinking this was important because. All right, everybody should have their copy of Shiloh out. Make sure you have your copy of your reader's notebook. And in fact, let's go ahead and turn to page 6, and that is the important events page. And I'd like to review real quick before we go ahead and get started. So we started compiling a list, and we should have 5 items on there. So please follow along, and if you are missing any of these, just go ahead, pause the recording, and add that into your list. So the first thing that we realized that was an important event was, you know, this dog, this beagle, follows Marty home. And the second thing was Marty goes ahead and names this dog Shiloh and goes ahead and starts to feed him. So the third thing is Marty and his dad, you know, after talking a bit, they end up returning the dog to Judd Travers. And the next thing, as soon as they return the dog, Judd goes ahead and he is verbalizes, you know, he's cussing a little bit, and he ends up kicking Shiloh, which, you know, that outside reading text, we learned that that's, you know, that's mistreatment of an animal. And then the final important event, I guess, would be at the very end. You know, Marty sees this, and he's really deeply hurt by it, and he promises to bring Shiloh back if he gets loose again. He just doesn't want Shiloh to be hurt. So those are the important events up to this point in the book here. Make sure you have all 5 of those down in your reading notebook. If you need to back this recording up just a bit and re-listen to that, please go ahead and do so. But we need to have that in there. Today we're going to go ahead and see what other important events are in this chapter. All right, so again, as we continue to create this list, I want you to make sure that you're copying it down. So if we could, let's go ahead, open up to page 18 of Shiloh, chapter 3. I don't sleep more than a couple hours that night. When I do, I dream of Shiloh. When I don't, I'm thinking about him out in the rain all afternoon, head on his paws, watching our door, thinking how I disappointed him, whistling like I meant something that first time, getting him to come to me, then taking him on back to Judd Travers to be kicked all over again. By 5 o'clock, when it's growing light, I know pretty much what I have to do. I have to buy that dog from Judd Travers. I don't let my mind go any further. Don't dwell on what Judd would want for Shiloh, or even whether he'd sell. Especially don't ask myself how I'm supposed to get the money. All I know is that I can think of only one way to get that dog away from Judd, and that's what I'm going to have to do. All right, I'm going to pause just for a moment here. So when the book said that Marty is going to try to buy Shiloh from Judd, I was thinking that this was a pretty important event because Marty's going to try to protect Shiloh the only way he knows how, and that's by buying him from his owner. So I'm going to go ahead and add that, number 6, on our important events list on page 6. I'm going to write down, Marty decides he will save up enough money to buy Shiloh from Judd. Again, Marty decides he will save up enough money to buy Shiloh from Judd. Go ahead and pause this recording if you need to. Make sure you have that in your notebook. All right, let's go ahead and begin or continue with Shiloh. My bed is the couch in the living room. So when Dad comes in to fix his breakfast, I pull on my jeans and go out to sit across from him in the kitchen. First, he makes himself a lunch to carry to work. He drives his Jeep to the post office in Sistersville, where he cases mail for around 200 families and delivers it. Then comes back to the friendly post office, where he cases mail for 200 more, delivers that too. Routes take him about 85 miles on roads you can hardly get by on in winter. Morning, he says to me as he stuffs a sandwich in a sack, then starts in on his breakfast, which is wheat chex and any fruit he can get from our porch or our peach tree. He makes himself coffee and eats the cornbread or biscuits Ma saves for him from our meal the night before. Can you think of any way I could earn myself some money? I ask him. With this foggy kind of voice that shows you aren't woke yet. Dad takes another bite of cornbread, looks at me for a moment, then goes on studying his cereal. Says exactly what I'd figured he'd say. Collect some bottles, take them in for deposit. Pick up some aluminum cans, maybe, for the recycling place. I mean real money. Gotta have it faster than that. How fast? I try to think. Wish I could earn it in a week, but no, I can't. Have to go out every day for a whole summer collecting cans and bottles to have much of anything at all. A month, maybe, I tell him. I'll ask along my mail route, but don't know many folks with money to spare, which is what I thought. After Dad's gone off, Becky gets up before Ma and I fix her a bowl of Cheerios, put her sneakers on so she won't stub her toes, and brush the snarls from her hair. Read once in a book about how some kids earn money babysitting. Boy, if I ever got paid even a nickel for every time I'd taken care of Becky, Daryl Lynn too, I'd have a lot of dollars. I do a whole bunch of jobs that other kids, other places get paid to do. But it wouldn't ever occur to me to ask for pay. If I asked Dad, he'd say, "You live in this house, boy?" And when I say yes, he'd say, "Then you do your share like the rest of us." Which is why I never asked. "More Cheerios," says Becky, and all the while I'm making her breakfast. I'm thinking the best route to take to find aluminum cans. By the time Daryl Lynn gets up, wearing one of Dad's old T-shirts for her nightgown, I figured how I could double my can count. But when Ma gets up a few minutes later, she takes one look at me and guesses what I'm thinking. "You got that dog on your mind," she says, lifting the big iron skillet to the stovetop and laying some bacon on it. "Thinking don't cost nothing," I tell her. She just gives me a little smile. Gives me a little smile then and sets about making my bacon strips the way I like it. And we don't say any more about Judd's dog. Must walk 5 miles that morning and all I find is 7 cans and 1 bottle. All right, I'm going to pause here and I want you to think about what important events did you read about in this section of the text? Again, what important events did you read about in this section of the text? While you're sitting there thinking, go ahead and pause the recording. Give yourself some think time. Then add that to your list on page 6. All right, welcome back. I tell you what, put your comments, the important events, add that to the comments section below, and then we'll go ahead and compile our list on Wednesday during the Zoom meeting. All right, so let's return back to our text, page 21. We're about halfway down. When Dad comes home, about 4, he hasn't found anybody looking for help either, but he says, "The Sears fall catalog came out this afternoon, Marty. You got nothing better to do tomorrow? You could ride my route with me, help deliver 'em." I say yes to that. No, I won't get nothing more out of it than a soft drink at the gas station, but I like going around in the Jeep, riding over the back roads like Rippin' Truck and Cowhouse Run Road with Dad. Can take a bag with me just in case, pick up any cans or bottles I happen to see. That night, Dad and I sit out on the porch, Ma in the swing, behind us shelling lima beans for next day, and Becky and Dara Lynn's in the grass catching lightning bugs and putting them in a jar. Dad laughs at the way Becky squeals when she gets a bug in her hand, but seeing those bugs in a jar reminds me of Shiloh all chained up at Judd's, a prisoner as sure as those bugs. Truth is, about everything reminds me of Shiloh. You once get a dog to look at you that way Shiloh looked at me, you don't forget it. "Got 17, Darylin shouts. "Aren't they pretty, Ma?" "Almost could turn off the electricity and let them light the kitchen," Ma says. "You gonna let them go?" I asked. Darylin shrugs. "They'll die if you keep them in a jar," I tell her. Becky, she comes over and crawls into my lap. "We'll let him go, Marty," she says, and kisses me on the neck. A butterfly kiss, she calls it. Bats her eyelashes against my skin. Feels like a moss wing. She laughs, and I laugh. Then far off, I hear a dog. Leastwise, I think it's a dog. Might could be a fox cub, but I think Shiloh. "You hear that?" I ask Dad. "Just a hound complaining," is all he says. Next morning, Dad gives me a nudge when he comes through the kitchen, and I'm up like a shot. We ride to Sistersville, and I haul all those catalogs out to the Jeep while Dad cases mail. Not everybody gets a catalog, of course, but anyone who places an order with Sears during the year gets one, so there's lots to load up. By 8:45, we're on the route. Dad pulls the Jeep up close to the mailboxes, and I stuff the mail in, turn up the little red flag on the side, if there is one. Some folks even wait down at the box, and then you feel real bad if you don't have anything for them. Dad knows everybody's name, though, and he always takes time to say a little something. "Morning, Bill," he says to an old man whose face lights up like Christmas when we stop. "How's the wife doing?" "About the same," the man says. "But this catalog's sure gonna cheer her up." And he sets off for his house, mail truck under his arm, or mail tucked under his arm. Excuse me. People even leave something in their boxes once in a while for Dad. Mrs. Ellison always leaves a little loaf of banana bread or a cinnamon roll, and Dad saves it to eat with his lunch. After we finish Sistersville, we do the friendly route. But as the Jeep gets up near Shiloh, my heart starts to pound. I'm thinking of closing my eyes tight in case the dog's around. If I see his eyes looking at me, they'll just drive me crazy. I can hear dogs barking when we're a half mile off Judd Travers' trailer. Dogs can pick up the sound of a Jeep that quick. I get Judd's mail ready for him. He hasn't got any catalog coming, but he's got two other magazines that'll probably warm his heart: Guns and Ammo and Shooting Times. Why don't he take the magazine about dogs? I'm thinking, teach him how to be kind. All the dogs is chained when we get to his place, So none's waiting for us at the box, but Judd is. He's got a big old sickle. He's cutting weeds along his side of the road. "Morning," Dad says as the Jeep pulls up. Judd straightens his back. His shirt's all soaked with sweat, and he wears his brown handkerchief tied around his forehead to keep the sweat from running into his eyes. "How you doing, Ray?" he says, and comes over to the Jeep with his hand out. I give him his mail, and he even stinks like sweat. I know everybody sweats, and everybody's sweat stinks, but seems to me Judd's sweat stinks worse than anyone's. Mean sweat. "How come you aren't at work?" Dad says. "You think this ain't work?" Judd answers, then laughs. "Got me a week of vacation coming, so I take a day now and then. This Friday I'm going hunting again. Take the dogs up on the ridge to see if I can get some rabbit. Possum, maybe. Haven't had me a possum dinner for some time." "Dog's okay?" Dad asked, and I know he's asking for me. "Lean and mean," says Judd. "Keep 'em half starved. They'll hunt better." "Got to keep 'em healthy, though, or you won't have 'em long," Dad says. I know he's saying that for me, too. "Lose one, I'll buy another," Judd tells him. I can't help myself. I lean out of the window where I can see his face real good. Big, round face. Whiskers on his cheeks and chin where he hasn't shaved his face for 5 days. Tight little eyes looking down on me beneath his bushy brows. "That dog that followed me home the other day," I say. "He okay?" "He's learning," Judd says. "Don't give him an ounce of supper. Didn't give him an ounce of supper last night. Just put him where he could watch the others eat. Teach him not to wander off. Got him back in the shed right now." My stomach hurts for Shiloh. All right, we're going to pause right there. And we've got some more important events that are happening here in this section. And again, I want you to go ahead and think about this. And kind of use the stem of when the book said, you know, describe what you heard. I was thinking this was important detail because. So go ahead, pause the recording, take a little bit of think time, and add your thoughts to the list of important events. All right, now that we're back, let's go ahead and finish up the chapter. "That dog," I say again. "What's his name?" Judd just laughs, and his teeth dark where the tobacco juice oozes through. "Hasn't got a name. Never name any of my dogs. Dogs 1, 2, 3, and 4 is all. When I want 'em, I whistle. When I don't, I give 'em a kick. Get, scram, out. Damn it. That's my dog's names." And he laughs, making the fat on his belly shake. "I'm so mad I can't see. I know I should shut my mouth, but it goes on talking. His name's Shiloh," I say. Judd looks down at me and spits sideways, studies me for a good long time, then shrugs as the Jeep moves forward again and on along the river. Okay, we're going to stop right there. But, you know, in this chapter we read today, Marty came up with a solution to his problem, and he decided he wanted to buy Shiloh from Judd. And this is, you know, this is not a very good solution because it's going to take him a long time to save up enough money to buy Shiloh. You know, I mean, there's just, you know, it takes way too long to collect cans and bottles. And while it's taking that time to do that, what's happening to Shiloh? Well, Shiloh's in danger. Staying there with Judd. You know, Judd doesn't feed her or feed him. And, you know, I mean, he kicks him and abuses him. So my question to you is, what do you think Marty is going to do next? Time for a prediction. Go ahead and write that down at the bottom of your page there. And we'll talk about that on Wednesday. All right, so today and every day when you read, I want you to be thinking about important events and how these events are related to the problems in the story. And doing this is going to help you keep the story in your head. All right? And again, this is what good readers do. All right, I hope you enjoyed today's chapter. And we will see you back here tomorrow. All right, until then, peace.